My mother believed and my father believed that if I wanted to be president of the United States, I could be vice president. This is
America. Former Vice President Joe Biden has been elected president of the United States.
It is my greatest honor and privilege to have been your president. We will be back in some form.
We are still deeply divided.
Public health experts warned this was coming unless more was done. And here we are now.
Are you proud of what happened here today?
Absolutely.
Never before in American history has there been an uprising like this.
Of the 75 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump, I don't know how many today are feeling, dear God, what was I thinking? But I would wager a lot more are thinking, let's carry on this fight.
Character matters. It matters. Tell them the truth matters.
The 21st century is going to be the American century. Because we lead not only by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. That is the history of the journey of America.
Well, in case you missed it, the Irishman abroad is coming to America. Since we last spoke to Marion, I've announced a bunch of other dates, including a date at the Gramercy Theatre in New York. We had a pre-sale on Monday for that. And all of the tickets sold out in the pre-sale. So we're adding another date in New York that will go on sale today. As you listen to this, the tickets will be available. There is no password. There's no pre-sale. They're just on sale now if you go to Ticketmaster. And you can get them for November 1st, the late show at the Gramercy Theatre in Manhattan, New York. Marion, to say I'm excited about this is an understatement. I can't wrap my brain around it. I have to go and lie down an awful lot.
I'm not surprised. The Gramercy Theatre, I've seen so many gigs there, events there. It's not just a beautiful theatre. It's a bloody good-sized theatre. And just have a look at all the people who've played there and you'll see you're in there with the big boys and girls. It's fantastic and beautiful. Yeah.
I'm in Cork this weekend for the Sonia O'Sullivan Cove 10-mile road race. We'll see you all there on Sunday. But Marion, every time I hang up the phone from you, something more ludicrous happens in America. There's a sense of relief each time I get to talk to you. Now, the listeners know exactly what I'm talking about. When last we spoke, the clock was ticking on Donald Trump's $350 million court bill. You made the case that that figure might be a little bit too high. You were proven correct. The number miraculously got deflated from 350 to 175 million in what surely must be the greatest Trump deal of all time. How did he pull off this magic trick?
Well, we've spoken about the whole Messiah complex and everything, but this kind of thing just convinces Trump supporters even more that God is on his side and God is guiding these judges and God is guiding this election. But, you know, I thought from the get-go that that fine was high. And there, we do have this Eighth Amendment, which, you know, specifically sort of cautions against excessive fines and cruel and unusual punishment. Now, it hardly qualifies as a cruel or indeed an unusual punishment, but it may well qualify as excessive. Yes, Donald Trump, there was a $2 billion overvaluing of his assets. Yes, he did all that to cut better deals with the banks. And the banks, I think because they were paid back in full and because they weren't complaining, I think that this is an indication to me that the appeals court will cut that fine in half or thereabouts. And that's why they were happy to do that and to say, okay, you know what, find 175 million. And that'll do, because I suspect they're not going to fine him much above that in this appeal. And he had to lodge that money in order to be able to appeal in the first place. So I think that's where that's at. I understand completely why Arthur Engoron, the judge in the New York case, fined him. And he said, look, this is the money you made. And thank you very much. You should never have made that amount of money, $354 million, because you made it based on a scam. So we're just going to take that back. And then everyone is where they should be. So it wasn't an unreasonable thing to do. But I think that there is a thing with, you know, New York being this city of capital and commerce, and that I just feel the judges, the appeals court might say it was too much. So we'll see. But anyway, it gave him exactly what he wanted. And with hours to go down to the wire. Now, would he really? And I don't know, because let's not forget to put this in context. at the same time as he was boo-hooing in the court and saying, oh, I've no money, I can't afford this, I can't afford this, or his lawyers were, he was boasting on social media that he had $500 million, $500 million in cash and stocks, that he had loads of money. So who was lying? Was Trump lying, or were his lawyers lying to the court? You know, and that's something that hasn't really been given enough energy and enough analysis, in my view. Certainly, if I were the judges, I'd be saying, well, what's the truth here? You know, what's the truth? Is he broke or is he not?
Yeah, because what I'm reading is the question is now, is where did the money come from to pay it? Who does he have to thank you? A used car salesman named Don Hankey, who is Don Hankey, and why is he swooping in this way? And surely it's not just him. I know he's a billionaire in his own right, but who is he, and why is he so integral to all of this?
So he is a California billionaire. He was known as the subprime king of car loans. So, you know, we all know about the subprime mortgages, but there was also kind of a subprime car loan thing that was going along as well, where, you know, it was all a bit dodgy and people were getting money that they couldn't really afford, but they were getting it at big interest rates and they were trying to buy cars. And, you know, it was tracking the whole craziness leading up to the crash of 2008. It was sort of a part of that. And he's also, he owns this company, the Knight Insurance Company. He's also the biggest shareholder in Axis Bank, which has had a number of legal problems. This is a guy who, I think it's fair to say, would be very much a graduate of the Trump School of Business. You know, that, you know, a little bit shady, a little bit dodgy, known to cut short deals, known to cut corners, and not the most reputable businessman in America. But as I say, he and Trump are buddies, they know each other. And this all comes down to, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. There's no such thing as a free $175 million bond. You know that it's a pay to play, and that presumably Don Hankey and his Axis Bank or whatever, you know, his insurance companies will be expecting some kind of return on their investment in Donald Trump, because allegedly 30 bond companies said, no thanks, we're not interested. So he
not
will get
Knight Specialty Insurance is the name of his company. And he says, this is what we do at Knight Insurance. We're happy to do this for anyone who needs a bond. This is what Hankey said of the wire service. But this isn't just anyone, is it, Marion? And no. That's probably evidenced by the number of services that turned him down. If we know that he stiffs cleaners, painters, lawyers, what is there to suggest that Don Hankey and Knight Specialty Insurance will receive their money? And should they not receive their money, what then?
Well, I think they will receive their money, because I think for Trump, the adverse PR of stiffing your bond guy, well, most things Trump does aren't presidential, let's face it. But I think that this would be, you know, you're trying to run a presidential campaign, you're trying to, you know, sort of appear like you're a serious contender, and that you can't just walk away from that. You can't just say, you know, if the court comes back and says, yeah, we're fining you $175 million and thanks very much, we have the money. I don't think that Trump can reasonably expect Don Hankey to take, you know, to bite that bullet and do so silently. I think there would be real consequences for him on that. Unless, of course, Hankey has already done a deal with Trump where he's willing to swallow that debt for whatever reason, whatever future payback he believes it would be worthwhile. But I think, by and large, if Trump is fined by the courts and he's fined that amount or more or less, I think he has to pay up. He has to pay up. And it's not, you know, given his newfound windfall or tsunami, I think windfall is a bit of an understatement. It's not like he can't afford it. You know, I think that he has got to, you know, he could wait. He could make Hankey wait for months, who knows, or however long. He may make him sit around and wait for it, but I think he will give it to him in the end.
Well, we will see. This isn't necessarily the biggest story. I am trying to just catch up on what we've missed with our bi-monthly podcast. One of the biggest stories of the last 2 weeks was certainly the Baltimore Key Bridge collapse.
Yeah.
I mean, a truly, maybe one of the most extraordinary videos of the year to watch this car crash take place. in slow motion. It was the stuff of action movies. What has emerged since, Marion, given that most people know now that this isn't the first accident that this ship's been involved in?
That's right. It was involved in was it 2015? It was involved in another accident. I think that this, like you say, I drive across that bridge so often because it cuts out a bit of the central. You know, Baltimore can get horribly snarled by traffic. And if you're going from DC to New York, I think a lot of people take that bridge. I am not a big fan of tall, skinny bridges at all because, you know, if you even look out over the edge and you have the slightest bit of vertigo, it does give you that sort of queasy feeling. And it always felt to me like a pretty spindly kind of bridge, even though there are a lot in America. It was built, I think, in 1977, so about 50 years old. But I, as you say, one of the curious things to me was the tugboat, because normally it is tugboats that take these, they guide them out of the harbour. Now, apparently a tugboat did, but they also usually, if there are structures, you know, nearby, they will also guide them through those structures. Now, the tugboat didn't do that. And it seems that that's one of the things that should be examined and should be examined by. So I think that there's, you know, the work is has started already. I think the new mayor of Baltimore, Wes Moore, or the new governor, I should say, of Maryland, Wes Moore, has come out of this very, very well as a very strong, authoritative figure and you know, has really acquitted himself well on this. But it is going to, you've got about 14,000 port workers. Baltimore is a poor city. It's one of the poorest cities in America. You drive through that city and honestly, parts of it are so decayed and decrepit that it's, I think of all the places in the States I've been, it's got some of the worst slums, absolutely. And about 14,000 dock workers who, you know, they're sort of casual laborers almost. They are reliant on the money that they get from unloading and offloading crates and containers and heavy stuff. And they're now out of work indefinitely. So it's going to have an impact on what is already a really poor city, a city with a lot of social problems. It's going to make it even worse. And of course, you have the six workers who drowned, who were lost in this accident as well, which is another real tragedy for their families. And it's one of those really just grim situations. And you know, the repairs are ongoing. The crane is there, but it will take a while. And I don't think anybody's too sure at the moment exactly how long it'll take before it's replaced, up and running, and whatever alternative they have put in place, you know, sort of patches up the difference.
I was amazed at how quickly the conservative news channels jumped on this as an opportunity to peddle their wares and the axes they had to grind around hiring foreign workers and the potential for it being a cyber attack of some sort. Has any explanation been touted that is other than a power failure on the boat? These things happen, and this was just a terrible time for it to occur.
Yeah, I think you've got to discount all these conspiracy theories. This was, you know, a power failure. The people on the boat, to their credit, immediately sent out the Mayday signal, which this could have been a lot worse, because when that signal went out, traffic was blocked. No more traffic was allowed onto the bridge. Now, at 1:30 in the morning or whatever it was, there wouldn't be that much traffic. But I've been on that bridge when it's been wall-to-wall traffic. And had it happened at that any of those points, there you could have had thousands of people killed as a result. You know, so I think that their swift action, the time it was, minimized the human fatalities, minimized the human cost. But I don't see any basis for any of these ridiculous conspiracy theories or anything.
Well,
else.
The last thing I'll say on it, right, is that when Apple phones across America registered the wrong time, and people missed all sorts of important appointments because every iPhone in America, you may remember this, somehow missed an hour, or the clocks went forward on everybody's iPhone, disrupted so many people. It later emerged that it was a hacker attempting to make a name for themselves. And I think I'm right in saying this, that they wound up working for Apple on that basis, that they were managed to hack all of these phones. Would it not make sense that if you were a hacker attempting to get the attention of Vladimir Putin, this would be the best way to do it? Watch this.
Yeah, I can see that, but I'm not buying it because I think there are a lot of, you know, I don't think Putin's short probably of ways of you know, disrupting things in the States if he were so minded. I'm sure that there, you know, cyber warfare is something that could erupt, you know, where either side should think, okay, let's try this route. And we've seen this before where we've had crashes in America of hospital systems, of other systems due to hacking. And we know that there are people out there who can create absolute chaos should they wish. And as I say, there are plenty of those. So no, I'm seeing this as you look at the evidence, you look at all the best available evidence and you kind of think, no, that this to me is a little bit like the eclipse of the sun that's coming with all this talk about the cities called Nineveh. Oh my God, this is going to be the end of the world and this is America's doomsday, etc. You know, closer scrutiny, you just go, oh, come on.
Okay, well, it does lead me in, and there's half the reason I threw it out there is because, you know, one of the biggest conspiracy theorists or best known conspiracy theorists out there, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is at it again this week. An anti-vaxxer third-party candidate who you may not be fully aware of just yet has been railing this week against President Biden, saying that he poses a much worse threat to democracy than Donald Trump. Marion, what has America been making of this, and can you explain exactly what happened?
Okay, last Saturday, I was down at Los Angeles Union Station, where this to me sort of is a little anecdote that just encapsulates the arrogance. And to me, Robert F. Kennedy is very, very close to Donald Trump in a number of ways, not just his policy positions, because they're on all fours on a number of those, but the arrogance of the persona and the sort of, you know, that he believes that his word, anything he says, by definition of the fact that he says it, makes it so. And this was an example on CNN when he said about Joe Biden that there was no basis in fact. Okay, he claimed, if we look at this briefly, his basis for saying that Joe Biden was a bigger threat to democracy than Donald Trump, who, let's not forget, January 6, 2021, lest anyone needs to be reminded, a president who refused to relinquish power when he was beaten in an election, a president who tried multiple ways to frustrate the will of the American people and to overthrow the results of the election. Okay, so, and we know all the evidence for that so far. So Kennedy's thesis is that Biden is a bigger threat to democracy because he says that he violated the First Amendment. Now, how does Kennedy claim that Biden did that? Okay, Robert F. Kennedy was thrown off Instagram and various other social media platforms because during COVID, he was making these crazy claims about COVID vaccines for which there was no basis in evidence. And I've heard him claim that they killed hundreds of thousands of people with no evidence, absolutely none. It's, you know, it's in his head. And if he says it, well, that makes it true. So he was kicked off these social media platforms correctly because he was putting out serious and potentially dangerous misinformation about COVID vaccines and other vaccines as well. He claims that Joe Biden ordered these social media sites, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, to take out Robert F. Kennedy. There's just no basis in truth for that. Yes, Biden and the Biden administration went to the social media outlets and they said, look, please monitor and please, if you can, remove disinformation about the COVID vaccines and the COVID pandemic because it's very dangerous. And, you know, these sites, to their credit, have had a policy of removing disinformation. They've removed, they kicked Donald Trump off Twitter and all those other platforms after January 6th as well. So where somebody is seen to be egregiously putting out nonsense, lies and dangerous nonsense and lies, they have blocked them on these platforms. So Robert F. Kennedy believes that anything he says should be allowed to travel the universe unchecked, and that if it isn't, then it's Joe Biden's fault. And that he's also whining about Joe Biden won't give him Secret Service protection. He hasn't met the criteria yet. That's all it is. You know, just because his name is Kennedy doesn't mean that he's actually entitled to special treatment, although his entire campaign is run and has been founded on the basis that he deserves special treatment and special consideration as a Kennedy, even though I don't think there's a single member of the Kennedy family who would agree with him. And just leading on from this, and I'll get here very quickly to last Saturday's event in Los Angeles. Since Kennedy has launched his campaign, I've seen about maybe 8 to 10 events of his I've attended now and spoken to a lot of people at them. But one of the big things he has been doing since the beginning to kind of counteract his far right positions, where he's saying no aid for Ukraine, and where he's basically saying on the Gaza war, well, these Palestinians had it coming and they're all pampered and there's no other country that's so pampered as, you know, as Gaza, or no other territory. And he to listen to him on that is quite chilling. But also on, you know, build a wall, he's opposed to gun control. All of these positions are 100% MAGA. Okay, so then to try and make himself not seem quite 100% MAGA, he boasts about his connections to the Cesar Chavez family. And Cesar Chavez, of course, is an American icon and a social justice warrior. And he was seen as somebody who really fought for migrant rights for decades. John F. Kennedy, RF Kennedy, were close to him and they were friends with him, particularly RF Kennedy, who is this guy's father. Now, in 1980, Ted Kennedy was running to challenge Jimmy Carter. And again, Cesar Chavez said, I'm with you. And when he died in 1993, a number of Kennedys were pallbearers of his coffin. Now, not to be disrespectful to his family, but there were a lot of pallbearers. Okay. So so many people had been associated with him, and the family wanted to recognize that. So there was a bit of an almost a musical chairs element that they were switching in now pallbearers. And for about 30 seconds, Robert F. Kennedy, who was about 40-something then, was one of the pallbearers. And there was a picture of him. And ever since he started his campaign, he's been touting this and showing it off and putting it in all his materials and boasting about his connections with Cesar Chavez. And all of this is to try and get the Hispanic vote, even though he's advocating for locking down the border, etc., and is really with Trump on border policy. So he sees this as a way of rehabilitating himself. So the Chavez family last Friday, the day before this event, which was on Cesar Chavez Day, there's a national day here to celebrate Cesar Chavez. So they sent Robert F. Kennedy a letter and they said, please stop using our father's likeness. Please stop pretending basically that our family supports your campaign, because we absolutely do not. And please stop linking our name in any way with your campaign. And the other thing that Julie Chavez works for Joe Biden, and she's a senior figure in his campaign. The Chavez family are totally supportive of Joe Biden. So anyway, on Saturday morning, Kennedy had got the letter, but he'd planned his Cesar Chavez Day of celebration and he just went straight ahead with it. So I just ignored them, ignored the family.
We paid for the balloons.
Exactly. Oh, and by God, we're going to use them. So I was down there and there was a couple of other journalists. And so afterwards he was asked, well, you know, hang on, the family is saying that they want nothing to do with this. So why do you keep touting Cesar Chavez and his family as your supporters? And he basically said, well, I never got the letter. And it, to which, you know, it was all over the media on Friday and Saturday. So he presumably he must have seen something about that. And then he turned around and said, well, they could have picked up the phone to me at any time, you know. And I said, and he completely ignored me. I said, well, should you not have picked up the phone to him, you know, like to the family? Should you,
so you
not
have to ask that to his face?
Yes. Should you not have got their permission? And he just completely, as he does when he doesn't like a question, he just ignores it. And so basically, his attitude was not just that he had used without their authority or permission or support, you know, basically the Chavez family as a way of proving his bona fides, you know, that then when they said to him to stop, he ignored them. And then when he was questioned about ignoring them, he said, well, they could have just picked up the phone, you know, instead of as a courtesy. If you're going to use somebody's name, likeness, whatever, you think you might call them first and say, look, is this okay with you? You know, but did none of that, saw it as his right. And that is how he's conducted his campaign. He's a pretty repugnant human being, I've got to say, based on everything I've seen of him. And just his dismissal of anything that doesn't jibe with his way of thinking. And then he has that sort of persecution complex like Trump does as well, that everyone's after him and he's just speaking the truth. And this is why they're all coming after him. And, you know, again, just it's exhausting because he makes all these spurious, outlandish claims and then he cites all these, you know, he blinds people with fake science then with surveys and reports and, you know, cherry picks things that might support one fraction of one word he said. And he's just he's a dangerous guy. And I think he's going to make a big, big difference.
What I was about to ask. I mean, we have discussed this cherry picking, the walking fact check kneader that he is.
Yes.
He just cannot say a sentence without somebody needing to pop up over his shoulder like the Microsoft paperclip to say, looks like you might need a little bit of help with the truth there. Yes. It's not happening. So once it's out there, it becomes part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Is that what makes him dangerous? Or is a third party candidate an actual threat to what this election is going to look like?
Oh, it's a huge threat. It could be a make or break. At the moment, you know, he announced his vice president, Nicole Shanahan. Very smart, very capable woman. It kind of offends me the way she's been portrayed in the media as just a vacuous, you know, rich ex-wife with a checkbook. She was a very accomplished, smart woman. How she got into the Kennedy crosshairs, I think, is she has a four-year-old daughter who was diagnosed with autism. Now, she claims that her daughter, until about 7 months of age, until she got her vaccines, was a super bright baby who was hitting all the markers, and that after that, that she deteriorated noticeably. Now, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for this woman, and it's heartbreaking that her daughter, you know, is autistic. And I think that she has, and, you know, anyway, this is what put her into the Kennedy anti-vax thing. And she's now his vice president. She's probably worth at least $1 billion. She was married to one of the co-founders of Google. And she apparently got about $1 billion in the divorce, even though he's worth about $120 billion. But so she can afford, she has the checkbook that could get Kennedy on the ballot in a lot of states, because to get, at the moment, he's on the ballot in one state, Utah. Therefore, he's no threat. Like Utah, forget it. It's 100% blood red state. Biden isn't going to get more than 5 votes there anyway. But he's also got enough signatures at this stage to put him on the ballot in critically important swing states in Michigan, in Georgia, in Arizona, and in Nevada. So that's 4 out of the 6. And he's likely to get, you know, if he now, with this cash boost that he has, because a president or a vice president, they can use as much of their own money as they want. So if he can persuade her, and she did shell out about $4 million for his Super Bowl ad, if he can persuade her to pay to get him on the ballot in these other states or become the Libertarian Party candidate, in which case he would automatically be on the ballot in at least 38 states, then he is a real threat to Joe Biden. Even if he just gets on the ballot in the states he's in already, that could cost Biden the election, because Biden cannot lose Michigan. He just cannot. If he loses Michigan, it's over. If he loses Pennsylvania, it's 1,000% over. I sort of feel at this stage that it's going to be very, very difficult for Biden to win Arizona and to win Georgia again. I don't see it happening, but he could win Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, notwithstanding his stance on Israel, which we'll get to, and the damage that's going to do him in those states. But if Kennedy comes into play, then I think you've got a whole other scenario. And, you know, people keep saying, and Kennedy, you know, one of the things he said on CNN, and it was astonishing to me, and I'm paraphrasing, but he was asked by the host, what if you just end up letting Trump win? What if all you achieve is that Trump becomes the next president? And he more or less said, well, you know, it's only going to be for 4 years. And I think that it will have been worth it for me to have made my whatever, you know, pitch on these important issues. I think it will have been a good, you know, a price worth paying. And you just think, what benefit has your wacko campaign been to anyone so far? What light have you brought to the debate? What have you? Nothing. But anyway, so I think that, you know, Biden's already in danger. And as I say, the presence of Kennedy, who is polling at the moment between 14 and 20% in all of these swing states. I've spoken to every Kennedy event I go to. You talk to the people who are in the audience. You know, you ask them who they voted for last time, who they're thinking of voting for this time, why, et cetera, et cetera. I would say by a factor of, God, let's just say I spoke to 100 people. I would say that at least 60, 65 of those are people who would otherwise have voted for Biden, who are disenchanted because of his climate change, or, you know, that he hasn't delivered as much as they wanted, or who just feel that he's a bit of a meh, uninspiring guy or whatever, but they would have voted for him to stop Trump. You know, that would have been their main purpose, that, you know, better the Democrat you know than the Republican Trump that you also know and know could wreak havoc. So they are now they're now going to go with Kennedy because they think that, you know, he represents them more. And even if when you say, but, you know, he's very unlikely to become president, they think, yes, but, you know, we have an option here and we're going to exercise it. I'd say about the Trump, as I've said from the get-go, the MAGA vote is non-transferable. I haven't spoken to a single person at any Kennedy event who is a Trump MAGA person who is willing to change the vote. Now, I've spoken to a couple of them who are there who went along to listen, but they're still going to vote for Trump. You know, they like Kennedy. They admire a lot of what he says, but they're still going to vote for Trump. And then the 30 would be independents. You know, and again, these are going to be who could have voted for Biden or could have voted for Trump, but they're thinking, pox on both their houses, I'm going to go with this guy instead.
Well, maybe the question or the answer is in your question, in that you're asking people, MAGA people that are turning up, but are they turning up in the same numbers? Those that are still on board. Clearly, they're speaking with their feet. Yeah. We've got so much more to talk about, Marianne, but we're out of time in the free episode. An Israeli airstrike in Gaza that, of course, you've heard about, kills 7 aid workers for non-profit World Central Kitchen this week. And it's sparked fury and indignation across everywhere, including the White House. Yet, President Joe Biden shows no signs of cutting the amount of funding and military software and equipment that he is plowing into Israel. We're going to talk more about that in the extra large version of our podcast, which goes out every single episode over on patreon.com/Irishman Abroad. If you haven't signed up, as things heat up in this election, you're going to need to be over there. We're going to talk a little bit about Trump Bibles as well. We're going to talk about April 8th's eclipse mania in America, a little bit about Baron Trump and the new fascination with him. And the last time I spoke to Marianne, I mentioned an Al Jazeera documentary about October 7th. Now, I don't know if the two things are connected, but it now appears that Netanyahu is going to ban Al Jazeera from Israel. We'll talk all about all of that over on patreon.com/Irishman.
Ready? You have the cameras rolling? This is
America. A lot of people who would probably consider themselves liberal have done very well financially under the Donald Trump 4 years.
You encourage espionage against our people.
Do you condemn any interference by Russia in the American election?
By Russia or anybody else?
Russia, please, if you can, get us Hillary Clinton's emails. Please, Russia, please.
To renew America, we must revitalize our...